I'm not sure. We'll see.
Did you get any x-rays yet or anything?
I did. I got x-rays, but I'm meeting with a specialist here very soon, and we'll see what he says.
Ladies and gentlemen, that could very well be the last time we hear from Drew Brees for quite a long time. That was Drew shortly after Sunday's game when he injured his thumb as he and Aaron Donald's hands collided. And the man who is 300 pounds won that battle, not surprisingly. This is Raymond Parch III. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on Stadium Network, that's 32.1. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. Initial thoughts were bad concerning Drew Brees. He got a second opinion, and those were confirmed. Number 9 has ligament damage in his thumb and will miss at least 6 weeks. At least 6 weeks. Could be longer. With his injury and Big Ben Roethlisberger's injury to his elbow, that's going to sideline him for the rest of the season. Brees is only going to miss 6 weeks. At least 6 weeks, probably more like 8. Big Ben is now done for the season. And Eli Manning got benched yesterday for a former Duke quarterback who struggled to complete passes in the Independence Bowl. That'll be a rant for another day. The 3 starting quarterbacks who won the Super Bowl in 2007, 8, and 9 will not be playing in Week 3. It's a brand new world we're living in, ladies and gentlemen. Brand new world. Quarterbacks have been dropping like flies. Andrew Luck retires. Done. Nick Foles, former Super Bowl hero for the Philadelphia Eagles, signs a contract to be a starting quarterback for the Jacksonville Jaguars, breaks his collarbone. He's done. Sam Darnold, the second-year star quarterback for the New York Jets, gets mono. As if he's a 14-year-old boy who's having too much fun at a 8th-grade party. Like, what? What are you doing? You're a grown person. He's done for quite a while. His backup, Trevor Siemian, comes in, appeared to break his ankle. He just ripped all the ligaments in his ankle. No big deal. Drew Brees. Ligament damage in his thumb, out at least 6 to 8 weeks. Big Ben, damage to his elbow. Some reports say that could be possibly Tommy John. He's done. And now Eli Manning is benched. Whole new world of quarterbacks. Obviously, that's having a huge impact in fantasy football circles. But for right now, it's all about Breeze. It's all about the Hoodats. Ed Werder was the first to report this yesterday. This occurred after our show had wrapped up. Reported that Brees had decided, after having his hand examined by 2 specialists, that he decided to have surgery today. Werder tweeted this out yesterday, tomorrow, so it would be today, Wednesday, in Los Angeles with Dr. Stephen Shin. A source tells Ed Werder that his timetable for his return won't be known until surgery is actually completed. That's why I say at least 6 weeks. You can run tests, you can do MRIs, you can do the whole nine yards, x-rays, physical tests, but until you go in there and actually perform the surgery, you're not going to know what the real recovery time is, and even that is just an estimate, ladies and gentlemen. It's not as if you hit a date on the calendar and all of a sudden, hey, my bulging disc is done. My hand, the pain in my hand is okay. I can use this knee and make a cut. It's not how it works. Bodies is different, okay? It just is. And recovery is different depending on your age and your health and sometimes the extent of the damage of the actual injury. Drew Brees sent Edward a text, quote, I'm confident in the surgery that will take place and will dedicate myself to rehab process to get back as quickly as I can. But will he? Will he be able to come back? I think that is a legitimate question that every Saints fan needs to ask themselves. We want to be optimistic. You want to look at it and go, okay, he's going to be back. It's only going to be 6 weeks, right? It's only going to be 6 weeks, RP3. Not a big deal. He's going to come back. But what if it's not 6 weeks? We talked about it on the show that it was going to be 6 weeks and that Teddy Bridgewater just needs to go 3-3 and that Drew Brees will still be able to go up against the competition, if you can call it that, in the NFC South. By the way, another MASH unit for the quarterback is Cam Newton, who they're being very secretive on whether or not he'll play this weekend and that he may have a severe injury himself. And that's on top of dealing with the emotional turmoil that is wearing my grandmother's old scarves. So what do the Saints do? I think they're going to play it close to the vest. I think they're going to hope that it's going to be a six-week process, possibly an eight-week. But here's the other thing. Let's say the surgery is successful. Let's say Drew rehabs successfully. He is a junkyard dog when it comes to being a competitor, comes to training, comes to taking care of himself, right? Comes to getting prepared for the season. He works out with Marines. This is a cat that's on a whole nother level when it comes to competitive nature. That does not mean that he'll be able to grip the football and throw the football exactly like he used to. That's the other thing that we got to prepare ourselves for, Who Dat Nation. Yeah, Drew may be able to come back. Let's say best case scenario, Drew only misses 6 weeks. He comes back. You cannot expect Drew Brees to be able to perform at the level where he was throwing, completing 70% of his passes and throwing for 370 yards and 3 to 4 touchdowns a game. Not at first. Not at first. Once again, this is his throwing hand. You need the thumb to grip the football. Drew's going to have some up and down moments even when he comes back. It's just not as if when he comes back, you're going to insert him into the starting lineup and boom, 400 yards passing, 80% completion percentage, boom, no turnovers, victory. Count it, put it on the board. No. So during this time while he's out, everyone else is going to have to step up for Teddy Bridgewater. I say they can survive going 3-for-3, even if it's 8 weeks. I can say if they go 4-4, they'll still have a chance to win their division. But that offensive line has to get their head out of their butts and learn how to play again. Because that performance against the Rams was awful. The wide receivers have to get better. And Teddy has to get better. And Sean Payton has to call better plays for Teddy. Once again, you're not calling plays for Drew Brees. You're calling plays for Teddy Bridgewater. If you don't want to waste the competition, if you don't want to waste the talent that you have on this roster that Jeff Ireland and Mickey Loomis and you, Sean Payton, have created, have built, have put together for this team to make another run at the Super Bowl because you know your window's closing with your aging quarterback who's a first ballot Hall of Famer, then you have to make all the adjustments. Everyone has to make the adjustments. Marshawn Lattimore has to figure out how the hell to play in coverage. I don't know what the hell happened to him. He has to figure that out. Friend of the station, Jeff Duncan, per Pro Football Focus, had this interesting stat about Marshawn Lattimore. The cornerback, third-year cornerback, was targeted 6 times in coverage in Sunday's game against the Rams. He allowed 5 receptions for 142 yards. Your shutdown corner, a guy who was the defensive rookie of the year, who's your number one cornerback, was targeted only six times in coverage. Well, I guess only is, yeah, six times is a lot, especially when he's in the coverage. He allowed five receptions for 142 yards and an opposing passer rating of 158.3. That tells you everything that you need to know, that Jared Goff and Sean McVay don't think Marshawn Lattimore is a shutdown corner. They don't believe that he is even remotely even close to being a number one corner in the NFL, because if they did, they would not attack him like they did on Sunday. They attacked him more than they did Eli Apple. And Eli Apple is the number two. Five different Rams wide receivers caught passes versus Lattimore. This wasn't he got abused by Cooper Kupp or got abused once again by Brandon Cooks, the former Saint. Five different wide receivers. The Rams opened up their playbook and said, we're going after him. And they did, and Marshawn Lattimore let them. Not that he let them because he didn't try. He let them because he's out of position. Very rarely do you ever see a player regress like this. Is there something going on with Marshawn Lattimore? We had halftime, I think it was last time, yesterday, call us about that, about Lattimore's regression. Well, what the hell is going on with Marshawn Lattimore? He is playing himself out of a contract. I'm telling you that now. Because once tape gets out on you like that, they're going to put on that tape, especially in your contract negotiation. And if you're the Saints, Mickey Loomis is going to put on that tape and go, why am I paying you number one corner money when you allow this to happen? Can you even name five Rams wide receivers? Not name Cooper Kupp and Brandon Cooks and Robert Woods? I can't even name the other two. I understand the Rams are a Super Bowl team, but guys are going to have to step up across the board. Across the board. Saints did make some news yesterday. Getting prepared for this week. They had to place Keith Kirkwood, who was an undrafted rookie out of Temple last year, had some moments, showed some flashes there, the wide receiver did. He was injured throughout training camp, if you remember, in the preseason. He's now been added to the injured reserve list. Linebacker Alex Anzalone, he's on the IR as well. He'd been battling injuries through preseason and through training camp. Only played, I want to say, 10 snaps in Sunday's game against the Rams. Did not play much after that. Has been placed on IR. And Saints now have two open roster spots. They put Kirkwood on IR. They put Alex Anzalone on IR. Now, Anzalone's replacement is Kiki Alonso. That's probably why the Saints pulled the trigger and traded for him right before the start of the season, because they wanted to see if Anzalone could be healthy. Once again, talented guy, well-liked guy, young linebacker, played 16 games for the first time last year, but has always been injury bug, Anzalone. So you got Kiko's there to replace him, so you should be good there. They also made the move of bringing back JT Barrett, practice squad QB extraordinaire. Been with the Saints a couple years, got cut, Seattle picked him up, he got cut again. Now he's with the Saints. That gives him a little bit of depth there at the quarterback position. He'll be their number three quarterback running the scout team. Also for the Saints on the injury news, in addition to Drew Brees being out, in addition to Keith Kirkwood going to be placed on the IR now, and linebacker Alex Anzalone, Tre'Quan Smith, the second-year player out of UCF, third-round draft pick, who, just like Keith Kirkwood, showed flashes last year developing with Drew Brees. His injury is a question mark this week. That's Mike Triplett reporting that. More than likely, the Saints will make a decision either today or on Thursday of possibly having to place him on the IR or just having him be a healthy scratch. And they'll call up either Emmanuel Butler or little Jordan Humphrey from the practice squad to give them the necessary depth needed at the wide receiver position. So there you go. Not only is Drew Brees, what we heard from him there, with the last time we'll likely hear from him for quite a while, as he's supposed to be having surgery today. Keith Kirkwood on the IR. Traquan Smith's status up in the air this week. Alex Anzalone on the IR. This is going to be the adversity that this team is going to have to face, and it's just not Drew Brees. Offensive line is going to have to step it up. Andrus Peat in particular. Oh, that guy looks... I'm not trying to pick on poor Andrus Peat. Okay? He's probably drafted way too high coming out of Stanford. He's a smart kid. Apparently a good player. Good teammate. And he's shown flashes since they moved him to the interior of the line playing guard instead of tackle. Remember how awful he was lining up at tackle? He's done better at guard. He's looked better at guard. At times, he looks like a good guard. Now, remember last year, he went to the Pro Bowl. Now, that was due to some injuries. All transparency. Other guys didn't want to go, so they selected Andrus Peat. He has looked bad first 2 weeks of the game. First 2 weeks of the season. Didn't look good against the Houston Texans. And just got just manhandled and embarrassed by the Rams. He's going to have to step up. The wide receivers are going to have to step up. Little Jordan Humphrey, Manuel Butler, come on down. You get called up to the big boy roster, you're going to have to help out Teddy Bridgewater. Michael Thomas is going to have to take his game to another level, and I know he's an all-pro. The Saints are going to have to figure out a way to target Ted Ginn Jr. more, who, by the way, went off for more than 100 yards in the opener against the Texans, including catching two big passes on the very final drive that set up the 58-yard game-winning field goal. You want to know how many targets Ted Ginn Jr. had in Sunday's loss at the Los Angeles Rams? Zero. That's play calling. That falls on Sean Payton in his enormous billboard size play sheet that he holds up every game. And that falls on Teddy Bridgewater. You have a playmaker, get the ball in the playmaker's hands. Got to do a better job of getting Alvin Kamara in space. Once again, I know the Rams are a formidable defense. I don't need to be reminded that. Got to get Alvin Kamara in space. He's got to take his game to the next level. Michael Thomas has got to step it up. Target Ted Ginn Jr. more. Have these guys coming off the practice squad filling in for the wide receivers. I got to see more from Jared Cook, damn it. Where the hell's he been? Two games? Nothing. Nothing. He's got to step his game up as well. And someone's got to do some type of hoodoo or voodoo or praying to baby Jesus or whatever it is with Marshawn Lattimore. Someone needs to spend time with him to get his mind right, because he looks absolutely lost out there. And if he's the cornerstone of your secondary, that's an issue. He's got to play better. Everybody's got to do better. Can't bellyache, can't complain about Drew Brees having to miss 6 weeks to a month and a half to 2 months anymore. Next man up, lead the way. Still got so much on the line, still so much to accomplish. But people have to do better, plain and simple. I went very long there. Got to take our first timeout of the day. I'm pumped up. I'm ready to go. I hope you are too. Appreciate you making us part of your morning. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. No sleep until you get to Seattle, the New Orleans Saints this weekend. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. If you'd like to give us a call, you can. Arco Equipment Hotline is open. Be more than happy to field your calls, 337-706-0111. We put up a poll question yesterday. We wanted to hear from you, the listener. How many wins do the New Orleans Saints have to pile up while Drew Brees is out for them to remain in playoff contention, to remain in Super Bowl contention? 42.9% of you said 4 wins. Another 42.9% of you said 3 wins. And 14.3% of you said 5 wins. We'll have a new poll question up for you by the end of this hour. But we got to take a very quick timeout. We'll keep the discussion going, moving forward. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. having a tremendous start to the day so far. Talking about the Houdats, about the New Orleans Saints, that everyone is going to have to step up. That starts with, at the top of that list for me, Teddy Bridgewater, Sean Payton. They have to both step up, but in different ways. Teddy has to get rid of the ball quicker. Plain and simple. Okay? He holds on to the ball way too long. Okay? Now, whether or not that is because he's a little gun shy, because he's not quite over that mental hurdle of playing in the National Football League again, and he's still trying to find his confidence that he had when he was a Pro Bowler that led Minnesota to the playoffs prior to the injury. Is that why he's holding on to the ball too long, or is he just holding on to the ball too long? Regardless, Teddy's got to get rid of the ball quicker. The Saints' offensive line is built for quick precision passing. When Drew Brees is in there, he can dump off the ball very quickly. One of the best in the league to do so. Now, you can't expect Teddy to be as proficient in getting rid of the ball as quickly as, say, Drew Brees is. There's only maybe 3 to 4 guys in the league that can get rid of the ball as quickly as Drew does. You got a lot of quarterbacks, starting quarterbacks in this league that hold on to the ball way too long. Okay? Way too long. Teddy's one of them. He's got to do better. He's got to go through his progressions. He's got to read the defenses better. He's got to play better start to finish. But Sean Payton has to be better as well, because he has to come up with play calls that suit Teddy's skill set. You can't – look, it's like back in the day when you had the Chicago Bulls, and then you're going to try to replace Michael Jordan with, like, Tony Kukoc. No, you can't. You're talking Drew Brees is a first-ballot Hall of Famer to be in Canton on the first ballot. He is a generational quarterback. There's no one else out there not named Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady that could come in and do the job Drew Brees does. No one. So to expect Teddy Bridgewater to be that guy, to be Drew Brees, not going to happen. It's not going to happen. I don't care how much Teddy prepares. I don't care how much he works at it. I don't care what happens. He's not going to be Drew. It's not going to happen. Saints fans have to realize that. Sean Payton has to realize that as well. Because you can't keep putting someone in your offense that doesn't get your offense, that can't execute your offense. So you got to do with what you have. You have to make the adjustment the great coaches do. The great coaches make adjustments, whether that's in college or at the professional level, of adjusting how they do, how they game plan, how they call plays to the talent they have on the field. That's how you win games. Sean Payton has to do that. So when I say Sean Payton has to get better, that's what he has to get better doing. And when I say Teddy Bridgewater has to get better, Teddy Bridgewater has to get better at releasing the ball quickly, reading his progressions, finding his wide receivers, and making good throws, and have the confidence in the pocket to trust the offense and to throw the ball in a spot. That's his other big thing that he has to do. A lot of times when you watch Teddy play, he's trying to hit the wide receiver in stride instead of throwing the ball to a spot for the wide receiver to get. That's a huge difference between him and Brees. Brees can throw to a spot and Michael Thomas will go get the ball. Teddy's still trying to throw right at his wide receiver. It's a slight difference, but it makes a huge difference in the ballgame. Let's head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Welcome to the program, Jim. Jim, good morning to you. How are you doing this morning, brother?
Good morning, man. I just wanted to add a couple comments in.
By all means.
First of all, I don't think Bridgewater can see the defense. I don't think he can read it. So when you were mentioning about Sean Payton needs to target him, I think he's just like what he does every time. He's getting too open, but I think if you look at Bridgewater and his line of work and his work so far as a quarterback, I don't think he can read defenses. Secondly, Lattimore's getting eaten up because we don't have any kind of pass rush. We got one guy, and he's pretty old, and we got Davenport, who is not living up to anything. So if we don't get a pass rush, them guys are going to eventually get open. And that leads me to address this. Saints have done a horrible job in preparing for the next guy for Breeze.
I would agree with that.
Been told by Peyton that it was Hill. Well, let's see if it's Hill. Obviously, it's not Hill. What about the defense? How about why can't we ever get linebackers? You think our linebackers are good? I think they're okay. Demario Davis, he's 30 years old, dude. Where's our youth like Dallas's guy, Chicago's guy? Why do we do such a horrible – I'd like you to answer that. We'll get you
two
cents on that.
I'd love to.
Why do we do such a horrible job on drafting? Can't get any linebackers, hardly any linemen. And why have we missed the ball for at least a decade in trying to find a Breeze future quarterback? Thank you, buddy.
Not a problem, Jim. Appreciate the phone call, brother. Have a great day. I want to touch on multiple things because Jim brought it. Jim delivered. The linebackers. I would agree. I mean, you realize the Saints were throwing Manti Te'o out there last year? I mean, A.J. Klein is an okay linebacker. He was better when he was with Carolina. Anzalone's always injured. He's okay. You don't look at the Saints linebackers and go, yeah, those guys, that's the strength of the defense. The last time you could say that about a Saints linebacker was who? Jonathan Vilma. That's the last guy. Right? That's the last guy. And remember how they put together the Super Bowl team defense? I'll remind you. Will Smith was already drafted, the late Will Smith, at the defensive end position. Peyton comes over. They make two free agent moves that year. In the first season, when the Saints ended up going to the NFC Championship game and losing to the Bears that year against Sexy Rexy, Rex Grossman. Scott Shanley, Scott Fujita. Now, Shanley was an underrated linebacker, but he was a middle-tier guy, right? He was a middle-of-the-road guy, but they fit that system that they ran, and he was a very good player. He had his best years with the Saints. Scott Fujita the same way. Okay? They brought those guys in, but more importantly, they went after and got Jonathan Vilma. Jonathan Vilma's been the best linebacker they've had by far in the Sean Payton, Drew Brees era. But Jim makes a great point. Why haven't they shored up the linebacker? Now, I don't know if it's a defensive philosophy for them or whatever it might be. But linebacker always has seemed to be not on the first tier of responsibilities of drafting or developing or signing. It's always almost comes off as an afterthought. Oh, yeah, we got to get a linebacker. Oh, yeah, we got to get a linebacker. Like Jim said, I like Demario Davis. Is he a game changer? No. Is he a good leader in your locker room? Yes. Is he a quality linebacker? Yeah. But once again, he's a second tier. When you talk best linebackers in the league, Demario Davis's name does not come up. Probably doesn't even come up for Saints fans. He's a serviceable linebacker. That's what he is, right? They got too many serviceable guys in the linebacking unit. Absolutely. That's a fair point by Jim. The other big point I wanted, he touched on, the Ted Ginn Jr. Yeah, Teddy has problems with his progression. He's not going through. I would maybe, if Sean Payton, I'd have maybe Ted Ginn do some underneath routes, maybe some crossing routes. Ted Ginn has reliable hands, and that could be someone that you could help him and Thomas get him, get his mojo going, so to speak, get him into a rhythm. The other thing that I think that Sean Payton is going to have to preach with Teddy, and he's going to have to make sure to make the play calls, got to get Jared Cook involved. You signed him in the offseason because you got tired of having minimal production out of your tight end position. You're getting minimal production out of your tight end position through two games. Okay. Jared Cook needs to step up and overtake a game. He needs to have a monster game. That's why you brought him in there, so Michael Thomas is not double-teamed all the damn time. And the other point I'll quickly make that Jim brought up. They have taken the kick it down the road approach, kick the can down the road approach when it comes to having a backup quarterback for Drew Brees. They're like, we have this legendary quarterback. We have a generational talent. We'll draft Garrett Grayson out of the second round of Colorado State. Remember when they did that and everyone was like, what? That cat didn't even last 2 years. He couldn't figure out Sean Payton's playbook. Gone. They went through the McCown brothers. I think both of them played as backups. Chase Daniel. Chase Daniel backed up Drew Brees and turned that into making money elsewhere. Quarterback has never been a priority for the Saints. A backup quarterback has never been a priority for the Saints. They're taking an undrafted cat that they signed off someone else's practice squad in Taysom Hill. Taysom Hill is not a franchise quarterback. Stop. He's not. And as much as I like Teddy, he has to show me something. He has to show me why is he being paid as the highest paid backup quarterback in the National Football League. This could very much, our boy Barry Hurst has brought it up on Monday's show. He wrote an article for it for Big Easy Magazine. The fact of they never made it a priority to develop a backup quarterback to pass the torch from Brees, you know, have the torch passed down to them from Brees, could kill their chances at winning a Super Bowl this year. It's a valid argument. Let's head back out to the Arco Equipment Hotline. Welcome on Amos. Amos, good morning to you, brother. What's on your mind?
Good morning. Hey, it seems like you're pushing the panic button a little quick. I love Drew Brees, but I think Peyton Manning can make some adjustments and help Teddy Bridgewater this game. And my second thing is I agree with everything your last caller said, except for the fact that, you know, it's kind of cliche, you know, Teddy Bridgewater can't read defenses. I saw him scouring the defense, making adjustments. I didn't see a bad throw. I just saw bad timing among he and his receivers. Thank you.
Thank you, Amos. Look, I like Teddy. He was not awful on Sunday. The offensive line was awful. And that's another thing. That's why I brought up in the very first, as soon as I opened up this microphone this morning, everyone else is going to have to step their game up. You lost your franchise quarterback. Man up. Plain and simple. Man up. That offensive line looked atrocious. Those guys are getting paychecks too. Okay? Those guys are getting paychecks too. Teddy didn't have any turnovers. He was somewhat efficient. Maybe he doesn't have time to go through the reads. He does hold on to the ball way too long. The gloved one does hold on to the ball too long. I'd like to get him, see that ball get out a little bit quicker. He's a smart kid. He's well-respected in that locker room. I still call him a kid. Jesus, he's, what, 25 now? So he's a man. He's smart. He's intelligent. He's well-liked in the locker room. His teammates love him. The coaching staff loves him. And look, the Saints invested money in him to be the highest paid backup quarterback in the National Football League for a reason. They have faith. I said it on this week's show already. I trust Sean Payton enough to see what we can do here. Being thrust into as the quarterback in a game when your wide receivers and definitely your offensive line and many members of that team, you could see that they were deflated once they saw Drew was not in the game. It affected them mentally. Against a game that they had circled on their calendar, even though they told us they had not. That was a revenge game. And their captain, their leader, was out. They got deflated. They got deflated. And it showed, especially on offense. Defense actually carried the way for that team as long as they could. And they finally started breaking down in the second half. But they have to be mentally stronger on that offensive line. They have to play better. The wide receivers have to be mentally stronger. That side of the ball and the play calling by Sean Payton, they have to do a far better job this week in Seattle. Now, do I think they could win Sunday's game? Absolutely. Absolutely. This would be the classic kind of game that everyone say, well, they're going to lose. You know, everyone's always talking about, they're already looking at the schedule. Well, they're going to lose at Seattle, and they'll come back home on Sunday Night Football. They'll lose to the Dallas Cowboys and so forth and so forth. No, timeout. This is the NFL, where half the teams from a season ago don't make the postseason the next year. Where teams that are wild card teams, not even playing in the wild card round, teams that are actually the wild card team can win the Super Bowl. This is the NFL, man. It's a whole different ballgame here. Would not be surprised whatsoever. And the longer the week goes along, and I understand Seattle's history under Pete Carroll having the Saints' number, but this ain't your older brother, older sister, Seattle Seahawks team, guys. Marshawn Lynch is not there. The Legion of Boom is not there. Okay? They're just not. It's Russell Wilson and a bunch of dudes. And he's special. one of the best quarterbacks in the league, top five quarterback in my opinion, Russell Wilson is. MVP candidate year in, year out, especially with how much of a priority Seattle has not made the offensive line there. And yet he still finds a way to put up touchdowns and yardage and lead his team to victories. Russell Wilson's special. I don't want to hear otherwise. Now, is he number two overall pick in my fantasy football league draft special? Talking to you, Chad. Talking to you, buddy. I know you're hearing me. I know you're listening to me. He's not that special, but still, he's special. Had to throw a little shade at my buddy, Chad. My broadcast partner on Lafayette High Football, Chad Jones. Took Russell Wilson number two overall in our fantasy football draft. He'd never been in a draft before. God bless him. I just hugged him after he made the pick. Said, it's going to be okay, man. We're going to have fun. But would you be surprised if the Saints rallied the troops with a week to prepare and went into Seattle and won that game? I wouldn't be. Would not be surprised at all. I wouldn't be surprised if they came back home and beat the Cowboys. This is the NFL. It's a coin flip league. Always has been, unless it's the AFC East and the New England Patriots, and then that's not a coin flip. You know they're going to win that division every year. So the Saints are going to have to step it up. Teddy Bridgewater, step up. Sean Payton, step up. Offensive line, you better step up. And the wide receivers and the tight end group, everyone. And Marshawn Lattimore, Saints do have to get a better pass rush. Without doubt. Amos was right. But damn. Lattimore's got to play better. If you're supposed to be a lockdown corner in the National Football League, it doesn't matter if your team's getting consistent pass rush or not. You're still doing your job. If you're not, then you're not a shutdown corner. You're just a corner. There's a big difference, and there's a big difference when it comes to getting paid, ladies and gentlemen. We got to take a quick timeout. But you're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the show. Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame yesterday announced its class for the 2020 induction ceremony. So the 2020 class was unveiled yesterday. All transparency, RP3, your very own, is a Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame voter. Okay? So I'm part of that, I'd say, I guess, prestigious panel of Louisiana sports writers, broadcasters, and such that vote every year on who gets inducted in Natchitoches during the summer. We had a star-studded class for you, ladies and gentlemen. There's a full story up on 1037thegame.com that you can check out. Former Raging Cajun legend and Chicago Bear NFC champion, one of the best at forcing a fumble, Charles Peanut Tillman, is going into the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame this coming summer. Former New Orleans Saints star wide receiver, Mr. Flip Phone himself, Joe freaking Horn, is going into the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. We even got a multiple-time Mr. Olympian. We got a Louisiana Tech Lady Texters basketball legend. We got a Harlem Globetrotter going in. Woo! Sweet Lou Dunbar's going in. That's right. Oh, and if you didn't see, Nick Saban's going in too. Now, I've had people ask me, does he deserve to be in our Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame? He meets the criteria. And I'll say this. I know you hate Nick Saban. I know you despise him. I know you call him Nicky Satan. I know you call him the Nick-tator. You hate him because Alabama's beaten LSU all these years. I get it. But without Nick Saban, LSU is not a relevant program right now. Plain and simple. He built that program. Do you remember what Jerry Nadardo did to that program? And Nick Saban turned it into a national powerhouse and won you your first national championship in football since 1958. He deserves to be in the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame, even though you may hate him. But you can tell us what you think about this by going to 1037thegame.com, voting on our latest poll question. Do you believe he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame, Nick Saban, here for the state of Louisiana? Yes. No, never. I'll never forgive him. Or yes, but after he retires from Alabama. Those are your choices. So go vote right now at 1037thegame.com. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, Steve Helwick will join us, giving us a preview of Ohio Bobcats football right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game. Good morning. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. You can also find us on the Simulcast Stadium Network 32.1 or on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. Spent the majority of the first hour talking about the Hoodats. Where do they go from here? How they need to step up at multiple positions, quarterback, offensive line, wide receiver, and head coach, and the secondary, to get things done to keep this season afloat while Drew Brees is out recovering from thumb ligament surgery. We also have a new poll question up for you right now at 1037thegame.com. We need you to go vote on that for us, please. It was announced yesterday that Nick Saban, former LSU coach, current nemesis at Alabama, will be inducted into the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame next summer in Natchitoches. Our poll question to you is, does Nick deserve to be inducted into our state's Hall of Fame? Yes, he does. No, he doesn't, because you hate him because he left LSU. By the way, just a reminder, Nick Saban did not leave LSU for Alabama. He left LSU to go coach in the NFL, and he did that for 2 years, by the way, before he took the Alabama job. Just a reminder for Tiger fans. Also, your other option is yes, but only after he retires from Alabama. So please go vote on that right now at 1037thegame.com. But now it's time for us to talk a little college football, ladies and gentlemen. Both of our teams are on the road this weekend. LSU opens up SEC play on Saturday at Vanderbilt. We'll dive into that with the voice of the LSU Tigers, Chris Blair, coming up at 7:32. The Raging Cajuns, meanwhile, will go on the road for their first real road game of the season as they travel to face one of the best teams out of the MAC, the Ohio Bobcats. We'll talk to Billy Napier later in the show today at 8:32. But right now, we're going to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and get the perspective from the opponent, the team that's been coached for, well, wow, it's already been a decade plus now, by Frank Solich, one of the best coaches in the country, especially at that level. We welcome on to the program, talking all things Ohio Bobcats with us, breaking this down, letting us know about this quarterback we keep hearing about and whatnot, is the college football writer for SB Nation and Hustle Belt. It's the one and only Steve Helwick joins us. Steve, good morning to you, brother. How you doing?
Good morning. I'm doing really well.
Well, Steve, I appreciate you making some time out for us. I've been seeing your work online there through at Hustle Belt and through SB Nation about the MAC and about Ohio. So tell us a little bit about just where this program's at. I made the point yesterday, Steve, that I feel like this program could be the type of model that Billy Napier and his staff would like to replicate down here in Lafayette, being a team that's always winning 8 to 9 games a year, competing for the division championship, playing in bowl games and winning bowl games. Just how revered is Frank Solich with the job that he's done up there with the Bobcats?
One of the things Solich has done a really good job with is establishing consistency. And that's something that's really hard to do in the MAC, which is often cyclical. You see teams like Western Michigan have a peak in 2016, and then they haven't had more than 7 wins since. But so the fact that Ohio has had a non-losing record every single year since 2009 under Solich is very impressive. Bobcats also have 2 straight bowl wins, which are domination. Solich knows how to finish seasons, too. Last year, he won 6 of his last 7 games. He's very good at making adjustments, and he's very good at developing players in this program. Right now, Ohio had massive turnover from last season, and they had 2 opponents about their caliber that they played already in Pitt and Marshall, and they struggled with them, so they lost those 2 games. But in terms of the program, 8-9 wins every year, it looks good for Ohio, but the thing that Ohio is lacking is a conference championship. Somehow, the Bobcats' last MAC championship was in 1968, so it's been 51 years. This is their 2nd straight year entering the preseason as MAC favorites. So that's a goal that he's been looking to check off ever since he arrived in 2005. So Ohio, they look good as a program, but they're still more that they have to do. They haven't had 10 wins since 2011, and those are things that Solich was hoping to change going into this season, but so far it's not looking too great with a 1-2 start.
We're talking with Steve Helwick of the Hustle Belt. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Well, Steve, let's talk a little bit about the start of the season. They're 1-2. They defeat Rhode Island in the opener, which is expected. They lose to a Pitt team out of the ACC, so that's nothing to really hang your head about. But tell me a little bit about last week's game, the shootout against old conference rival and longtime rival, the Marshall Thundering Herd.
Yes, that was definitely a game Ohio has circled on their schedule, as Marshall is probably an analogy. Marshall is to the CUSA as Ohio is to the MAC. They're both very consistent programs of relatively high standing, and their old rivals. Marshall got out to a lead early in the game. It was back and forth early on, but in the second quarter, Marshall got up 10 points, and they were double digits for a while in the third quarter. Ohio had to come back. They scored the two straight touchdowns, and the final touchdown that they scored in the fourth quarter, Nathan Rourke blazed past the Thundering Herd defense for a 72-yard run. Rourke was really impressive after a week where he was just getting pressured and sacked all day at Pitt. So I thought it was a really good bounce-back week for the offense that only scored 10 points back in Heinz Field. But the defense did not show improvement. The defense was okay against Pitt. They were making stops, but against Marshall, they couldn't stop the run game. They were allowing almost 7 yards a carry. Brendan Knox had 133 yards. Ohio's defense definitely, they had a lot of turnover from last season, and they did not really show much improvement. At the end of last season, that defense was getting really good. It seemed to be improving game by game, and then it just culminated with a shutout performance against San Diego State in the Frisco Bowl. This year, the defense is off to another rocky start, which caused them to lose that game to Marshall. Marshall responded to Rourke's 72-yard run with a touchdown of their own, and then at the very end of the game, Ohio punted, and Marshall just grounded the ball for the last 6 minutes of the game and to seal it. Ohio couldn't get a stop on all those runs Marshall was doing late.
We're talking with Steve Helwick of Hustle Belt. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Let's talk about the quarterback. Coach Billy Napier and his staff have taken notice. He's been mentioned throughout the week here, especially with his playmaking ability, huge long scoring runs in particular. What's the quarterback's strength? Is it his feet, or is he more of a balanced dual-threat quarterback?
The feet are his strength, but Nathan Rourke he's also improved as a passer over time. In 2017, we saw a lot of mistakes out of him, and the development was definitely noticeable in 2018. I thought he should have won the MAC Offensive Player of the Year. He was a second-team All-MAC quarterback. His completion percentage greatly improved from the 50s to up to around 61% from 2017 to 2018. His touchdown to interception ratio improved, and he was averaging more yards per attempt, getting more looks downfield, and he got better at throwing on the run. Rushing, yeah, he led all quarterbacks in rushing touchdowns in his first season playing in 2017. In terms of rushing, he basically stayed at the same level throughout his whole career, but that's a very high level. He's one of the best running quarterbacks in college football. Kind of reminds me of back when Northern Illinois had Jordan Lynch, and Lynch finished top three Heisman voting. Mm-hmm. Well, he hasn't impressed to that level yet. Rourke is still a phenomenal runner and someone to be taken seriously. He struggled against Pitt. He was sacked 6 times. He couldn't escape the pocket, was facing pressure the entire game. But I really liked the way that he showed resiliency, bounced back against Marshall, and posted 118 yards on just 9 attempts.
We're talking with Steve Helwick of Hustle Belt. He joins us courtesy of the ARCO Equipment Hotline. All right, Steve, what do they do very well on defense, and what do they struggle with? Because they are going to be facing a raging Cajuns team that has a three-headed monster at running back, and they love to run the ball. This is a run-oriented offense. They have 3 guys that could go for over 100 yards any given game. So how does that match up with what Ohio does on the defensive side of the ball?
Ohio's defense can definitely be inconsistent at times, as the unit performed really well against Pitt, but not so well against Marshall. The player to watch definitely on the defense is Javon Hagan, who's a senior free safety for the team. And he's a very good run stopper, and he can thrive in the secondary as well. Ohio has struggled so far this year with pass defense. They could not stop Kenny Pickett against Pitt. I think they let Pickett throw for over 300 yards and have complete nearly all of his passes. But then the next week, it was the run unit, which was suffering against Marshall. Isaiah Green had a good day through the air on them, but it was really Brendan Knox who was tearing them up on the ground. So Ohio really hasn't found their defensive identity this year after the three games that they played, and that's a problem. But we know that Frank Solich teams have adjusted and got better with defense as seasons go on. And right now, Ohio is giving up about 456 yards a game, which is down in the deep 100s in college football. So the defense, that's definitely what's holding Ohio back from starting 2-1 or 3-0. They really need to find a strength. I think losing linebacker Evan Crouch to graduation this offseason was a huge loss for the team because he was their defensive leader. He was their best run stopper, and the run game suffered a little bit since his departure. And so far, the secondary really hasn't got things together through the air, but I know that's something that Solich can adjust going forward as the schedule eases up a little bit and as players get more experience and more time in the system.
We're wrapping things up here with Steve Helwick of Hustle Belt. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Steve, let me ask you this. For us down here, for the Raging Cajuns, this is a huge game on the schedule because they begin conference play the following week. And they have a ton of tough opponents, Georgia Southern, App State, and Arkansas State to start conference play. And then things get a little bit easier on the back end. But, you know, this team has goals of reaching, you know, so many wins this season, competing for a division championship. And this game is huge on their schedule to help with that and become a bowl team once again. How big is this game on the other side for Ohio in that same regard?
It's urgent. Ohio cannot afford to start a season 1-3. The Bobcats have too much talent to do it. I mentioned earlier that they're MAC contenders. They're a team coming in with high expectations. Honestly, I'm sure this Bobcat team and the fan base expected to beat Pitt and Marshall both on the road, or at least one of them and play the other one close. So watching their offense just get dominated by Pitt's defense was definitely an unsatisfying feeling for this fan base. And then losing to Marshall in a close one, that one's just a heartbreaker to start 1-2. Ohio can't have 3 next to its name in the loss column because this team has too much talent. They have a star senior quarterback, Nathan Rourke, and to do that would be bad. But the thing is, before the season, if you asked me about Ohio against Louisiana, this is a game I chalked up as an easy win for Ohio. But I've been so impressed with Louisiana. I saw a lot of what they did against Mississippi State, keeping that game close. And I'm really impressed by it. It seems like they just throw out a different running back every single time, and he's able to get 10 yards a carry. Louisiana's backs have been really impressive this year, and I don't know how Ohio's defense can respond to that rushing game. So I definitely think this is a close game. So it's not a given for Ohio, even with them playing in Athens. But the conference play starting soon, you got to end it on the right foot, and the Bobcats have to do their best to stop Louisiana's run game and get Nathan Rourke continuing to go after that Marshall game in order to set themselves up well for conference play so they can achieve that goal of their first conference title in 51 years.
Steve, appreciate you waking up early, joining us and giving us all this insight on the Ohio Bobcats, brother. Keep up the great work there at Hustle Belt, and we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Thank you.
That's Steve Helwick of Hustle Belt. That's one of the websites through SB Nation. He covers the MAC for them, in particular the Ohio Bobcats. You can give him a follow if you'd like at @S_Helwick, HELWICK. Woo, there you go. Getting a little preview, Cajun fans, of what you got to expect. But Steve has been impressed with what the Cajuns bring to the table and thinks that the Ohio defense will struggle against that vaunted rushing attack. Watch out now. Watch out now. Could be something special coming on Saturday. Could be a big win for the Cajuns. We'll have to see. We got to take a quick timeout, but you're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
First of all, what kind of mythical powers does a sun devil have? We've got to consider that. I'm going to say the Wildcat's out. the Trojan? Does he have a horse or is he on foot? Does he have a bow and arrow or just his sword? The Bruin, definitely formidable. Another bear up there at Cal. The tree, I imagine that tree's going to get chopped down. Unless we're going to go with the bird and somebody might get pecked or something, I don't know. A duck might lose interest and just fly away and get out of there, which may be good advice under the circumstances. The husky, no chance. The beaver, well, we'll see how long that beaver can hold his breath. The ute, again, we're back to, is he on horseback? Does he have a bow and arrow? Did he trade for a rifle? I mean, you know, because if that ute's got a rifle, there's some definite problems. You know, you'd have to get one of those Harry Potter activists to read up on how you kill a sun devil, because there's a lot of outside stuff there. Just as far as a beast alone, a buffalo's going to be pretty hard to tangle with. I mean, a buffalo's utterly outstanding. Did I leave any of them out? The cougar will find a way. Clear-minded and crafty, a combination of stay out of harm's way and attack when you get your chances or your openings.
That man is an absolute treasure, and we're blessed to have him in our lives, all of us college football fans. That's Mike Leach, the Washington State head coach. He was asked about the mascots of the Pac-12, and he just went on a whole tear. Does the Sun Devil have powers? We need to get those Harry Potter people to figure that out. You know, if the Ute has a gun, that's a game changer. This man is absolutely phenomenal. The Pirate, Mike Leach. The air raid offense that he helped develop with Mummy. All the success he had at Texas Tech. And that cat is on another level. He talks about things that are just amazing. I was pushing hard last year on this station to have LSU face Washington State in a bowl game because I wanted the joint press conference of Mike Leach and Ed Orgeron. That would have been gold, absolute gold. In an era where coaches just give you coach speak all the time and don't commit to anything and don't say anything that's offbeat or weird or just amusing, and most of them don't have a damn personality to save their lives, thank God for Mike Leach. Because that cat is an absolute character if there ever was one. He's perfect for Pullman, Washington State, by the way. He's great there. I mean, he just went on a two-minute thing dissecting the powers of the mascots of the Pac-12. Just randomly doing it. He has so many things that he just randomly talks about. Sips tea during his interview process. What a quote machine. What a guy. You're always going to get copy from Mike Leach. There will always be copy for Mike Leach. And oh, by the way, he may be kooky. He may be someone that's left over from the flower generation that just so happens to be coaching football. But the guy knows how to develop offensive-minded players slash coaches. Here's a list for you. Gardner Minshew, his starter last year, is now a starter in the NFL with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Luke Falk is now the Jets quarterback. Cliff Kingsbury is now an NFL head coach. Graham Harrell is the University of Southern California OC. Sonny Cumbie is the TCU OC. By the way, all those gentlemen, all five, were Mike Leach's quarterbacks since the start of 2000. Yeah, every quarterback that started for Mike Leach at Texas Tech and Washington State has a job coaching or starting in the NFL. Bravo to the Pirate. We got to take a break. When we come back, the voice of the LSU Tigers, Chris Blair, is going to join us live right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Reminder, LSU on the road this Saturday, 11 a.m. kick, Tiger fans, talking to you. I know how much you enjoy Friday night. I know how much you enjoy Saturdays. So make sure to wake up early, set those clocks, so you can listen to LSU take on Vandy and the Tigers SEC opener this Saturday. 11 a.m. kick. Pre-game show will start at 9 o'clock. You can listen to it live right here on 103.7 The Game. And the man who will be on the call, as always, one of the best in the business, and our good friend. He joins us every Wednesday. It's the voice of the LSU Tigers, the one and only Chris Blair. Chris, how you doing this morning, brother?
I'm good. Happy belated birthday to you, by the way. Hope you had a good one.
Thank you, brother.
And looking forward to getting out on the road and, you know, one of the better stops in the SEC. Doesn't get there very often, but LSU playing Vanderbilt and Music City. Unbelievable, this great scheduling the SEC does, but it's been 9 years since these two teams have played, and that one happened to be in Nashville, and it happened to be pretty much all LSU 27-3. But we'll take the Tigers roadshow this time in conference play, so looking forward to it.
And Nashville is a great city. I had a great time when I went up there for the SEC tournament earlier this year, Chris. And I know it's just not the football game on Saturday. There's also going to be a coach's caravan event on Friday night. What can you tell us about that, brother?
They're taking a great group of coaches here, Dee Bro, Will Wade, Nikki Fargus, I believe Beth Tarina. I'm not sure the entire list, but the all-stars of LSU coaches, so to speak, they're going to be in Nashville that evening down on Broadway and, you know, getting fans together. And as you said, it's kind of an early start, so kind of cuts into that whole tailgating on Friday leading to Saturday. So they're going to try to get everybody going that afternoon, evening hours there with the type of TAF caravan. Then I'm sure Tigers will have no problem whatsoever finding something else to do later on in the evening. But as you said, you got to be up and at them and ready to go. A little football brunch this coming Saturday.
We're talking with Chris Blair. He is the voice of the LSU Tigers. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Chris, let's go back just briefly to last weekend. It was a lopsided game, a rout in every sense of the word. But give credit to Northwestern State. They came to play, in particular their offensive coordinator. They came up with a good game plan to attack Dave Aranda's zone there in the first half. Of course, he makes the adjustment to go to man coverage in the second half, shuts him down to only, 67 yards total there in the second half. Just your takeaways from what you saw on the call last Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of what I expected it to be. You know, I guess you get a little spoiled when you manhandle a team like Georgia Southern to open the season at home, and you kind of expect, okay, Northwestern State, FCS team, then that ought to be the same thing. They should, you know, barely sniff the end zone, and if they get points, it should come late in the game, and it should be a field goal. On and on and on and on and on. But overall, it's 65-14. You know, the offense had a little slow start, and I really preface, I'm overemphasizing slow start because they put up video game numbers once again. Joe Burrow was extremely accurate. Miles Brennan came in. It was good to see him running the offense. Even when the game was, you know, kind of in hand, they still came out and ran the LSU offense, and Miles Brennan was 8 of 9 passing, which – you know, again, the accuracy of both these guys with this great receiving core that still, you know, amazes me that it goes 5, 6, 7 guys deep, you know, doing a good job running the offense. And as you said, you know, they went with zone coverage and, you know, much like Texas did, Northwestern State came in with a game plan with a pretty good quarterback in Epler and said, hey, look, we're gonna put some pressure with the slot receivers and put them in space, and this guy's going to get the ball to them. And it's kind of what happened. And then on the second touchdown, it was just kind of a breakdown, a mistake. Not sure if that was on the cornerback or if that was on the safety, but either way, it was a mistake, and they let a guy in the tight end get wide open. Outside of that, as you said, second half, there wasn't much to speak of. So, again, just a win. No surprise. I think the score kind of what we all thought it would be, minus maybe them not getting 14 points. But all in all, some good things, some things to continue to work on. And, you know, that's kind of what I've been talking about this week as they get ready to take on Vanderbilt. But you're off to a 3-0 start. You're number 4 in the country, according to the AP poll. Everything's good. Enjoy it.
Talking with Chris Blair, voice of the LSU Tigers. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Chris, this was brought up in the postgame presser, and I've already expressed my thoughts on this, but I'd like to get yours. It was brought up, someone was just kind of asking it through three games, that if Coach O was pleased with the running game and that it's not averaging a huge amount of yardage, even though it's seemingly every running back in Saturday's game scored a touchdown. You know, my thought is this. the offense that they're running is a pass offense first. The pass is setting up the run. And when you're rolling with your quarterback, who's now a legit Heisman Trophy candidate, you're going to pass the ball more. And the running game is going to become secondary. Is that what this is? This is what we're seeing, or do you have any concerns whatsoever that the running game is not where it needs to be right now?
No, I'm not concerned at all. In fact, this is kind of what I predicted a month or so ago.
That's
after
right.
seeing the first two preseason scrimmages, is that there was going to be this kind of opining for the running game, even though everybody's wanting to see a different kind of offense. But if you go back and listen to Coach O, 3 years ago, 2 years ago, offseason coming into this year, he wants a 50-50 team offensively. And it's not just about, I want to have 50 plays running and 50 plays passing. It's about the ability to take advantage of whatever the defense is trying to impose on you, whether that's, you know, take away the pass or take away the run. You know, I think where LSU was a little hamstrung over the last 3 years is that when teams loaded up the box and sold out to stop the run, there wasn't a whole lot of offense that LSU could come up with. And when you met up with teams that had matching physicality and, for the most part, matching talent, you had trouble moving the football and scoring points. So now you've had 3 weeks, a team that's got a great core of receivers, as I mentioned. You've got, as you said, a Heisman candidate now in Joe Burrow. And these guys have been wide open. You'd be crazy not to throw the football. There's no reason to go into it going, well, we need to run the ball 50 times in this game, so, you know, this play, let's run it. I mean, that's just silliness. O has said multiple times there are going to be games this season, maybe multiple games, where Joe may not be as accurate. Maybe he's got more pressure on him. Maybe they completely sell out to stop the passing game. You're going to have to be able to run. That starts with the offensive line. It starts with your running backs. But I don't have any indication yet that there's a problem running the football. They haven't really tried to or, frankly, even had to in the three games they've played so far. So, I mean, we'll have to wait and see. Do I think it's a solid running game? I don't know. But I have no reason to think they can't run the football if they have to. And I know it's been emphasized not only when Coach talks about it in a press conference. It's emphasized every day in practice. So let's wait and see. Same thing with the defense. Let's wait and see before the sky is falling. Sometimes when things are going so well, you got to find something to pick at. So, like I said a moment ago, let's just enjoy it. You're 3-0, number 4 in the country. You open SEC play. You're a favorite on the road against Vandy. Let's go out and play the game.
And, Chris, and I just make this point as well to piggyback off what you said. You got a Heisman Trophy candidate in Joe Burrow. You have an offense. That's why you brought in Joe Brady to be the passing game coordinator. Look, if you have a Ferrari, you don't sit there and drive it like a damn minivan, right? If you have these tools, you use them. It'd be foolish not to, like you said. If you got a guy that can throw for 350 yards in a game, you're going to do so. It just makes sense.
Well, it's one of the things I've heard over and over and over since coming to South Louisiana. You know, LSU's had a ton of great receivers over the years. We just never used them. Well, now they're using them. So, as I said, enjoy.
We're talking with Chris Blair, voice of the LSU Tigers. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Chris, let's move it forward. Let's talk about this weekend's matchup. SEC play begins on Saturday, 11 a.m. kick there in Nashville. As LSU takes on Vandy, you can listen to the game and listen to your call right here live on 103.7 The Game. Chris, tell me a little bit about Vandy. Look, I know Coach O talked about the amount of respect that he has for Coach Mason. Rightfully so, that's a mutual respect. He's a well-regarded coach. But the problem with Vandy, as it is every year, is they just don't have the talent. They don't have the horses. But I know Coach O is not underestimating them. So what are you looking for from the Tigers this Saturday when they go up and play Vandy in Nashville?
You know, what's interesting, and I agree, one of the things that always stands out to me about Coach Mason's Vanderbilt teams is that they're physical. You know, and you're going to get effort. It's one of those things, you don't have to have talent. When you go through that list, Vandy's kind of, over the years, going back with Coach Mason and even Coach Franklin, they've always kind of had those, here's the things that don't take talent. They've done very well. You know, it's kind of hard to put a finger on Vanderbilt in 2019. They played two games. They were off this past week. They opened the season against Georgia, and it was all Bulldogs 30-6. They then go on the road Purdue puts up some big numbers. I think 42-24, something in that neighborhood, was the final score. And then Purdue, maybe not as good as we thought Purdue was. So, you know, I've watched the quick cuts from both of those games. And what's missing, I think, is, you know, their offensive line losing three a year ago. They got a decent back, a running back. But they're just having trouble trying to penetrate and find any creases to run the ball. The transfer quarterback, Riley Neal, is kind of their best hope offensively, even though he hasn't put up eye-popping numbers. He's averaging about 261 yards per game, but they're only averaging 15 points per game through the two. So how good was Purdue? I don't know. They've lost two games now. Their only win comes over Vanderbilt. And, of course, Georgia is, you know, played very well up to this point, one of the top teams in the country. I just think you have to assume you're not going to have, they're not going to beat themselves. They're not just going to go in at home and let, you know, LSU make a bunch of mistakes and still be able to win the game. I think you're going to have to be as crisp as possible, continue to be efficient on offense. You know, this is a defense that, frankly, is near the bottom. You know, I think like 125th when it comes to passing yard defense. So I think Joe Burrow and his receivers, unfortunately, I don't know if there's going to be a lot of running. They may decide to stay with the air here because this team has struggled against the pass in the first two ball games. But they're like 115th in total defense. So you could see a little bit of running. And if you do, I imagine you'll see a good steady rotation for LSU. And then offensively, like I said, without an offensive line with a lot of experience, they've kind of relied on their quarterback to sling it around the yard. So, which may not be a bad thing, considering LSU, at least against Texas, and as we said early in the game against Northwestern State, have been susceptible to the pass. So it'll be interesting. You could hear Coach O after the win on Saturday mention they had some issues with the zone concept defensively, and they went to man-to-man. One of the things I'm going to look for early on in the matchup when LSU starts on defense Saturday in Nashville is whether or not they go to that zone pass coverage or whether or not they go ahead and start the game out man-to-man, try to lock down and force Vandy to try and run the football.
We're wrapping things up here with the voice of the LSU Tigers, the one and only Chris Blair. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. All right, Chris, I need to ask you, brother, and you know, you've been in this position now for a few years, but you did your research. You have a firm grasp on the history with LSU and the LSU football program in particular. So last year, the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame inducted Les Miles. It was announced yesterday that the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame is going to be inducting Nick Saban this coming summer in Natchitoches into the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. Your thoughts on the man who helped turn around the program and make it into a national power, and do you think he's deserving of the state's Hall of Fame?
You know, it's interesting. When I saw the news come out yesterday, I thought the timing was a bit, I don't know, suspicious or odd. Do I doubt that the man deserves to be in the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame? I think if you just look at the measurables, he's as deserving as, you know, a lot of, if not all of the folks inside the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. The timing this year, interesting. Still coaching at Alabama. Everybody's talking about a possible LSU-Alabama showdown, as we see each and every year, and whether or not this is the year LSU can find a way to win on the road and beat Alabama for the first time, and obviously seems like forever. Seems odd. This is the year they're going to put him in there. But, you know, as far as deservingly, I mean, I think if you look at the numbers and what he did and the impact he had on LSU, the state of Louisiana and really high school football and college football, no doubt about it. It's just interesting to me it would be this year.
Chris, appreciate your time and your insight as always, brother. Enjoy Nashville. Have a great time this weekend, and enjoy being on the call on Saturday.
Looking forward to it. Going to be in Nashville about 28 hours. We're trying to make the most of it. Thanks, man. Y'all have a good week, and go Tigers.
That's Chris Blair, voice of the LSU Tigers, joining us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, talking all things LSU football. We got to take a quick time out here. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the show right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. LSU baseball schedule has been released. It was released yesterday. some interesting things about the schedule. You're going to open up the season at home versus the Fighting Hoosiers of Indiana. Well, that's right. That's how we're going to start things off. It will be a three-game series. Once again, Indiana is a pretty good program. They were an NCAA regional finalist earlier this year. So LSU, fresh off a super regional a year ago, will have 37 home games, and 27 games will be against programs that took part in the 2019 NCAA tournament. So some stiff competition LSU will be facing off this coming season. They'll start things off on February 14th. It's always earlier than you remember. Baseball season's always earlier than you remember. They'll open things up at Skip Bertman Field on February 14th when the Tigers face off with Indiana in game one of a three-game series. The Wally Poneff Jr. Foundation Classic will be played this year against Tulane, and that will be played inside the box as well. And of course, the non-conference schedule is also highlighted by a trip to Minute Maid Park, the Big Juice Box, home of the Houston Astros, for the Shriners Hospitals for Children College Classic from February 28th to March 1st, when LSU will play Texas, Baylor, and Oklahoma. To find out more about what the Purple and Gold are going to be doing on the diamond, make sure to go to 1037thegame.com. We have a story up about LSU revealing its baseball schedule. We got to take our final timeout of this hour, but when we return, Connor O'Gara from Saturday Down South and Saturday Tradition joins us, talking all things college football. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game. Good morning. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game. We've had a tremendous show so far, haven't we? Appreciate you making us part of your day. Appreciate the phone calls. Also, appreciate all the votes that you've given so far on our latest poll question, which is currently up right now at 1037thegame.com. It is, does former LSU head football coach and current Alabama head coach Nick Saban deserve to be in the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame? The announcement came out yesterday that he will be inducted in next summer's class, along with the likes of former New Orleans Saint Joe Horn, raging Cajun football legend Charles Peanut Tillman, Phil Robertson of Duck Dynasty fame, as well as Angela Turner of Louisiana Tech, Lady Texter basketball legend, and Sweet Lou Dunbar of the Harlem Grove Trotters. Well, so far it's been overwhelmingly in favor of Nick Saban being inducted into the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. 77.8% of the vote says yes, he built LSU into a power. 22.2% say yes, but only after he retires. They feel he deserves to be in, but not while he's still coaching Alabama. And so far, zero votes for no. Hell no. We don't want him in there. We can't believe he's still at Alabama. Let's keep the college football discussion moving forward. And there's no better person to do that than our next guest. He is a gentleman and a scholar. You can read his work at SaturdayTradition.com as well as Saturday Down South. He's got a podcast. He's doing it all. He's appearing on Paul Feinbaum's show on a regular basis now. He's almost too big time for us, but I appreciate him making time for us regardless. It's our good friend, the one and only Connor O'Gara. Connor, how you doing this morning, brother?
Too big time, man. I'm not too big time at all. Like, I made my own breakfast, like, not too long ago. I'll make my own lunch, probably make my own dinner. I'm not big time at all.
Oh, I love it. I love it, brother. But, hey, congrats on all the pub that you're getting, though, for all the hard work you're doing over there at Saturday Tradition, Saturday Down South, man. Well-deserved, my friend. Let's get right to it, though. You came on my show earlier this year, and you were out front on this about Joe Burrow, probably earlier than anyone else, about how you felt that he could have a tremendous season, that he could be in the conversation for all SEC, you know, first team quarterback with Tua and Jake Fromm, that he was that good, and you expected him just to have a great season and lead LSU into the mix for the college football playoff. So I'll let you have the microphone, man. It's all yours. Just go ahead and tell us just how much of a prophet you actually were.
No, I just liked, you know, I liked a lot of the things that he'd working in his favor coming into this year. And, you know, I made the prediction back, I think it was in like March or April, where I said, you know, I think LSU's going to have a top 20 offense this year. And that was met with a lot of reactions that Florida fans were very outspoken, saying, oh, man, that's ridiculous. And Alabama fans, of course, kind of let me have it on that. And now I think I was underestimating it, just how good this offense could be. And, you know, a lot of the things that I liked about Burrow coming into this year have really played out. We talk about the experience that he had at the receiver position. Justin Jefferson is one of the most underrated receivers in the country, still, amazingly, despite the fact that he's been ridiculously good to start the year. And then guys like Ja'Marr Chase and Terrace Marshall, obviously, have been really, really good. And I just loved how much he had coming back on that offense and the fact that he was going to have an entire offseason in this new offense, an offense that was really built more for his skill set. He can run. He can use his legs. And he's able to make those decisions. He's a guy that's so experienced and just understands how to read defenses. And I thought last year he got a bad rap because statistically it wasn't the best year. And I didn't think he could take as many of those chances because of the lack of depth at the quarterback position and the fact that they had major issues at the tackle position. And when you have those two things working against you, you can kind of only do so much. And that system last year really wasn't allowing him to open things up. And we see now what he can do when it's opened up. I mean, his passes over the middle of the field, you know, 20 yards out are just on the money, just so, so good. And he has put himself into the Heisman conversation. Now, did I think that he would have better Heisman odds after week three than Trevor Lawrence? No, I can't say I was that high on him. But at the same time, you know, I thought he was just going to have a great, great year in that system. And I think that, you know, he's got a lot of big, big games in front of him. And there are very few quarterbacks in the country that I'd rather have leading my team than Joe Burrow.
We're talking with Connor O'Gara. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, columnist, reporter for Saturday Down South and SaturdayTradition.com. All right, Connor, let's talk. You mentioned Trevor Lawrence. Let's talk a little bit about him. They got the win, but he looked very human against Syracuse this past weekend. Why?
You know, I think it's the old what do you do when you get punched in the face type thing. And, you know, Tua already experienced this at the end of last year where it's like, all right, defenses have, you know, they have a book on you and they know how to attack you and they can kind of see what works where you've actually had weaknesses come out. And I think that all of these teams who have been preparing for Trevor Lawrence, they've been preparing for him for an entire offseason. Like even Syracuse probably had stuff put in because they're like, all right, here's what Trevor Lawrence is going to run. Here's what we're going to try and do to be able to confuse him, to shut him down. And, you know, to their credit, you know, these defenses have been able to do it. And Mike Elko, you know, is very, very good at what he does. Texas A&M defensive coordinator. And he was basically going to say, Trevor Lawrence, go ahead and beat us. I'm going to put an extra guy in the box. I'm going to say, you know what, Travis Etienne, you're not going to be the guy that's going to beat us today. I'm going to make Trevor Lawrence do it, and I'm going to make him try and read defenses. I'm going to make him try and make these throws downfield and not just turn to the running game. And it's been difficult. I mean, he's made some throws that have been just all-world ridiculous. I don't think he's hurt his NFL draft stock by any stretch of the imagination. I think people are still gaga over him. They see the upside. But this is something that every quarterback experiences, right? I mean, there's always going to be a book on you of what we can do to make you outside of your comfort zone. Every quarterback comes down to earth at a certain point. And, you know, I'd say the good news for Clemson is the fact that, you know, they've dominated their schedule so far and had, you know, what everybody thought was going to be their two toughest regular season games. You know, they won one by 14 and they won the other by 35. And Trevor Lawrence hasn't even looked good yet. So I think that bodes really well for this team. I think right now it's just a matter of kind of maybe dealing with a little bit of some of that offseason hype. And then just dealing and trying to figure out how these defenses are attacking him and figuring out a way to, you know, to be able to kind of move past this. I mean, he's extremely talented, highest-rated quarterback recruit of all time, and I expect him to be able to bounce back.
We're talking with Connor O'Gara of Saturday Down South and SaturdayTradition.com. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. All right, Connor, you mentioned one of those other teams that Clemson played, A&M. That was not a close game. It was close for a little while, and then Clemson just proved that they were the far superior team. That leads me to this. Is this Saturday's game between A&M and Auburn more important for Texas A&M because of their schedule, or is it more important for Gus Malzahn and the Tigers?
You know, I think A&M, you know, people have kind of – I think people have realized, like, all right, this is going to be really difficult in year two. to get to a New Year's Six Bowl, and I think people have kind of backed off of that. I think this is bigger for Gus, and I think it's bigger because if he wins this game, I think Auburn deserves to be a top-five team. I think they deserve to move past Oklahoma. I think they deserve to move past Ohio State. They will have beaten two ranked teams away from home, away from the friendly confines of Jordan-Hare, and in order for that to happen, it's going to be because Bo Nix shows up and has a big game on the road. And I think right now for Gus, a lot of what he has been associated to is this new offensive course and trying to, you know, groom this true freshman starting quarterback who everybody knew so much about coming into this year. But it's how he's going to perform that is really going to determine his job performance. And that's why so much was tied to this decision. And if Bo Nix goes into College Station and just lights him up, I mean, has the best game of his young career. Everybody says, you know, the Oregon game he struggled with for a while, which he did, and then he had that great last drive. If he has a complete game, a 60-minute game, and just looks really good doing it, we're not talking about Gus is on the hot seat for a long time. I mean, maybe till that Alabama game, because that's just how it always seems to work on the Plains, but I think it is bigger for him. And I think if he gets in that top five conversation, all of a sudden we're starting to talk about, can this be one of those magical years for Auburn? I think that is a realistic conversation that we're having after this week when you consider the two quality wins that they would have under their belts.
We're talking with Connor O'Gara of Saturday Down South and SaturdayTradition.com. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Connor, let's leave the confines of the very familiar SEC for a moment. I want to go out west. LA football, not great. Not even close to being great. UCLA looks just dreadful. And USC looks a little bit better, but I know there's turmoil there as well. What do you think of the state of college football in the City of Angels?
It's a joke. I mean, you saw the pictures the other day of that game against Oklahoma. Here, I mean, think about if Jalen Hurts came to an SEC stadium. That stadium's full. That stadium's full, even if the team is terrible. I mean, like, he could be playing at Vandy, and Vandy, I think, would still have a sellout to watch Jalen Hurts play football. And I understand the aesthetics aren't great because, you know, it is the Rose Bowl, and that place is huge. But at the same time, you have that empty of a stadium to watch your team's premier non-conference home game. And everybody knew they didn't have a chance in that one. And sure enough, they just get destroyed. And to me, that's a sign of a program that's just in complete and total shambles. Like, Chip Kelly, everybody, you know, wanted him 2 years ago after the 2017 season. You know, Florida fans were bummed out that he didn't come to Gainesville. It was looking like that was going to happen, and then it didn't. My goodness, did they dodge a bullet, because it looks like the game has passed it by. And it looks like, you know, I always tend to think that while these new innovative offenses are great, defenses always catch up eventually. And it kind of looks like that's just happened with Chip Kelly, where, you know, he was kind of ahead of the curve, so to speak, from an offensive standpoint. And it looks like everybody just caught up and figured it out. Now he's like, oh, well, I don't know what to do. And, you know, his roster obviously is not great. But at the same time, this is year two, and you're 0-3. And to me, that's just an awful sign for that program. And then, yeah, USC, all sorts of issues, you know, having Lynn Swann step down. It's just not good. It's not shaping up to be a year that Clay Helton is going to be able to keep his job, just because whenever your boss leaves, it's all downhill from there. So, yeah, I mean, it's baffling to watch, because you would think it'd be so easy to recruit for places like that. But those are two programs in need of big, big, you know, overhauls, culture changes, whatever you want to call it. They're just down in the dumps right now.
Let's keep it in the Pac-12. I know you saw it. The national treasure that is the Pirate, Mike Leach, breaking down the mascots and their powers of the Pac-12, said that we need to get someone, one of those Harry Potter obsessive fans, to tell him what kind of powers the Sun Devil has for Arizona State, that if the Ute has a rifle, if he bartered with someone and traded like a horse for a rifle, that could be a game changer. I just, your thoughts on Mike Leach, the Pirate, who also, by the way, every quarterback that has since 2000 at Texas Tech and now at Washington, is either starting in the NFL or is coaching in college or in the NFL.
Yeah, go figure. You know, everybody's talking about Gardner Minshew in the NFL, who, by the way, you know, former Nick Saban wanted him to be a third-string quarterback last year. People forget that.
Yep.
But Gardner Minshew is making a name for himself in the NFL as the Jags starter now in place of Nick Foles. But about Luke Falk, you know, another one of Mike Leach's guys who got in on Monday Night Football and now is, you know, at least temporarily before the Jets sign a quarterback, they probably have, and I just didn't see it or something. But, you know, he's kind of getting a little bit of a chance to get some runs. So, yeah, good for Mike Leach. I mean, that's as long as his quarterback train keeps moving, I mean, that dude can say whatever he wants. Whenever he says something like this, I think about, you know, you could say that stuff in the Pacific Northwest, and people are, you know, people love weird up there. I mean, it's a totally different mindset, and media members kind of coax a little bit. They kind of throw them into it, and they ask those questions. I think it'd just be so much different in the SEC, and I think, like, you know, it's just different in Pullman, Washington compared to Knoxville. Like, where if you were 2-1, it'd be like, you know, everybody's supposed to be like, why'd you lose? Like, you go on the local radio show and you try and if he said the things that he said, people would be like, this guy is just, you know, he's just looking for whatever he can to try and distract us. It's a filibuster, blah, blah, blah. I think Mike Leach is perfect in his element up there. And it actually, like, made me worried when I heard about him, like, associated with the Tennessee job a couple years ago. But let's just let Mike Leach, you know, kind of run his own country, run his own, you know, government, whatever we want. He can run it. I think we'd all be very captivated by it, and we'd get great quotes like this all the time.
And then we'll also get the answer of what kind of powers the Sun Belt, the Sun Devil has. I mean, that's
exactly.
I wasn't expecting that this week, Connor, but thankfully for Mike Leach. One final question for Connor O'Gara of Saturday Down South and SaturdayTradition.com. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Connor, we've brought up his name before, and I'm going to head back to the Southeastern Conference footprint, even though it's not a team in the actual conference. Florida State, they found a way to lose to Virginia, to the Wahoos. Willie Taggart, what better way to describe his tenure so far at Florida State? Is there a better way to describe his tenure at Florida State than just saying woof?
No, I mean, that's it. It is woof. It is still, I said it in the offseason, and I'll still say it today. It's the most desperate program in America, and it's not close right now. I mean, just absolutely desperate for relevancy and not coming anywhere close of having it. And, you know, people last year were saying, oh, this is all Jimbo's fault. He left the program in shambles. Florida State right now is a missed extra point away from potentially being 0-3 with a loss to Louisiana Monroe, Boise State, and Virginia. Like, that's where we're at right now with this program. That's not all on Jimbo. There's no way that's all on Jimbo. And the fact that his team is just so ridiculously undisciplined is just mind-boggling. And the lack of in-game adjustments to me is what's so troubling. And, you know, he throws Kendall Briles under the bus. Kendall Briles, the guy that people were emailing administration in Florida State saying, do not hire this guy. We have a lot of respect for our university. We know what this man was a part of at Baylor. Do not hire him. And then, of course, Willie Taggart, because he is completely desperate right now, hired Kendall Briles, and then only to throw him under the bus after that game against Virginia. So, yeah, it is the most desperate program in America, and I feel bad for those fans because they deserve better. Like, I don't blame fans in Tallahassee for not showing up to watch that team play football, because what in the world in the last two and a half years has made you think this team is worth watching? I understand unconditional support and all that stuff, but when your coaching staff does this and does stuff like that off the field as well, how can you get behind them? I think that's just so difficult. It's different if, you know, you got a team out there that was decimated by sanctions or something like that. You got a bunch of walk-ons. You can tell they're trying their hardest, but they're still going to get destroyed, like a post Pony Express SMU or something like that. That's a different story. Florida State is in its situation because Florida State did what it did, and Florida State has completely fallen off the face of the earth in terms of relevancy. And, you know, if they lose this Saturday against Louisville at home in Tallahassee, man, that Willie Taggart, the hot seat talk is just going to continue to escalate throughout this season. I don't see any way that he's going to avoid it. Maybe, I mean, if that team misses a bowl game, which I would not bet on them getting to a bowl right now, then I can't see him coming back in 2020. I just can't.
Connor, appreciate you delivering as always, my friend. keep up the tremendous work that you're doing over there at SaturdayTradition.com and Saturday Down South. And we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Sounds good. Appreciate it.
It's Connor O'Gara, one of the best college football reporter analysts in the business, joining us there, breaking down things all college football on a national scale. We love to do that with Connor here on RP3 and Company. We got to take a quick time out. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Two against Seattle. Bregman drives one deep to left field. It is 2-0 Astros. Alex Bregman up on the train tracks. Jordan drives one to center field, and this ball is crushed. Air Jordan. Now a direct flight to Hawaii. It's 3-0 Astros.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company, right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 Game. Based on the bats of Yuli Gurriel, Alex Bregman, and Jordan Alvarez, that helped power the Astros to a 4-1 win and gave all the run support Cy Young leading candidate Justin Verlander needed as he struck out 8 through 6 shutout frames Tuesday night as the Astros got the 4-1 victory over their rival Tejas Rangers. Verlander, by the way, is 19-6 now on the year. He's going to get to the 20-win plateau. He scattered 4 singles and drew within 11 of reaching the 3,000 career strikeout plateau. Only a few dozen have been able to do that in Major League Baseball history. They're one win away from their third consecutive 100-win season. And it looks like they are going to get there. They could get there even tonight. Reminder, Astros will be on our sister station, KVOL, tonight. That's 97.7 FM, 1330 AM, Lafayette. Rangers at Astros, pregame 6:35, first pitch at 7:10. Let's see if the Astros can get to win number 100 tonight. You can listen to it once again on KVOL. We got to take a quick timeout. More RP3 and Company will be next, right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Hey, Raging Cajun fans, it's time for A Cup of Cajun Talk with Billy Napier, presented by Meters Kitchen Supply and Gulf Coast Bank. Oh, yeah.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. I was able to sit down yesterday with UL head football coach, the one and only Billy Napier. His team prepares for a big road trip this Saturday at Ohio. Here's our interview. All right, Coach, let's look back to last weekend. You had a record-setting night there at Cajun Field. Most points scored in the modern era and the largest margin of victory in program history. I know it was against a team from the SWAC that is trying to rebuild, but still a dominant victory for your program. How did you feel about what your team was able to accomplish on Saturday, Coach?
Well, I was really proud of our staff and certainly the leadership amongst our players. I felt like we were in the right frame of mind and prepared to play. We started the game really fast. That was the challenge. We wanted to start fast and leave no doubt. And I think the coaches and the leadership amongst the players had us ready to go. Executed in all three phases. It's always a positive. And it really gave us an opportunity to develop a lot of the players that we need to make progress for our team to continue to improve. And then lastly, we had an opportunity to play a lot of these young men that worked their tail off each and every week to help prepare our team to get ready as a scout team player or a job taker player. And for those guys to get an opportunity to play, I felt was pretty special. So proud of our team, certainly turned the page, really working hard on Ohio now. I look forward to this great opportunity.
Let's talk a little bit about the Bobcats, Coach. They're led by a veteran coach, a man that I know you respect very much, and Frank Solich. He's been there quite a long time. He has a great level of success year in and year out. I'll start off with this. Is kind of the model that Frank has there at Ohio, how they're always in the mix for a conference championship and going to bowl games seemingly every year, is that the kind of model for a mid-major that you kind of look to and are looking to make the Cajuns into yourself?
Well, certainly I got a tremendous amount of respect for what they've done in the past. You know, he's been there for 15 seasons. What I'm most impressed with is what I see on the field. You know, they play with tremendous effort. I think they're sound fundamentally. I think they've got a really good blueprint in terms of how they play together, offense, defense, and special teams. And certainly, you know, he's proven to be a contender in his division and in the MAC conference. He's played in the championship game a number of times. You know, we're in year two, you know, so we're going to work really hard to get the most out of this group of players specifically, and that's where our focus is right now.
Talk about their quarterback, Coach. He's a dual-threat quarterback. He leads that offense. What kind of challenges does your defense face facing off with Ohio's starting quarterback?
Well, the Rourke kid is, you know, he's extremely effective. I mean, the guy's got several years' experience. He's a nationally recognized quarterback in terms of he's in the top group for the entire country. Certainly, I think he's a really smart player. He's a very efficient, accurate passer. And the thing that I think gets overlooked is the fact that the guy's a tremendous athlete that can run with it. You know, he took 180 last week for a touchdown. I mean, he's very capable of beating you with his feet just as much as his arm. So, you know, when you're playing a guy like that, that presents, you know, probably the biggest challenge of any offense that you could play when you got a quarterback that's an effective passer but also can run as well.
We're talking with Billy Napier, head coach of the UL Raging Cajuns football team. Coach, what are some of the other things that they do offensively that really stand out to you once you are breaking down the film?
Well, they've got a big physical offensive line. You know, most of the players, even though they might not be listed as returning starters, they do have significant experience. They've been a little bit banged up at running back, but they have some very capable players that I think are going to be back this week. I'm impressed with a couple of their receivers. I think they've got some skill on the outside that can create some matchup scenarios that can give you some issues. So, you know, they've got a well-balanced group. You know, the personnel is really good, certainly really tall, long, big frame, tight end room, so really good on the edges. They've got a blueprint that works, and they've been very effective. Certainly, I think that what they do offensively complements how they play defense and how they play special teams. So this guy's been coaching for a long time, and he understands how to win, and I have tremendous respect for him.
Coach, talk about the other side of the ball. What are the Bobcats? What kind of defense do they run, and what kind of challenges do they present your high-powered offense, especially with that running attack that you have?
Well, I think they've got a proven identity. They understand who they are. I see a very well-coached group, certainly play with tremendous effort. I think they kind of know where their piece of the puzzle fits. They play really good team defense. You know, they've got some really good tacklers, kind of their force players on defense in the secondary tackle really well. And they've got just enough of a changeup and a slider to complement their base that they can create some issues for you. So, you know, we got to go do what we do and certainly try to position our players where they can go play. And if they use the correct fundamentals and make the right decisions, you know, we can put ourselves in an advantage play. So, you know, it's the same old formula for us, and that's what we're going to work on this week as we prepare.
We're talking with UL head football coach Billy Napier. His team prepares to take on the Ohio Bobcats this Saturday in non-conference action. Coach, talk a little bit about just gearing up for the first real road trip of the season. Obviously, you started off the year down in New Orleans inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome, but this is a totally different type of beast going across the country all the way up to Ohio. What are some of the challenges that presents you and your staff gearing up for a game like this all the way across the country?
Well, you know, I think we'll have lots of young players that this will be their first true, you know, want to call it plane trip away game, and the things that go with that. But, you know, we've got a core group of players coming back. We've played in several games like this. You know, anytime you don't have familiarity with where you're playing, there's a little bit of adjusting to be made. But, you know, it's football, man. You know, you got to go play no matter where you play, what time you play. I think our veteran players will do a good job of leading some of these rookies that we have that will be joining us on the trip. But, you know, I think the big thing is they've been very successful at home, so they'll be comfortable. And certainly they've lost the last two on the road. It'll be good for them to get back home. And we know they're anxious and excited about playing us. So, you know, we're zeroed in and prepared for this week. We have a great week of preparation so we can go in there with some confidence. And that's really what it's about. You want to have a great week of prep so that you can play with confidence and cut it loose on game day.
We're talking with UL head football coach Billy Napier. His team once again takes on Ohio this Saturday in non-conference. Coach, you know, tell me a little bit about Levi Lewis. How pleased have you been with his progression? He continues to get better every single week. A dedicated young man, has the respect of his locker room. Just talk about his progression, even though it's only been three games this season, what you've been able to see out of your starter.
Well, I think he had a little bit of anxiety in that first game in the opener, and rightfully so. You know, he's worked really hard in the offseason. You know, first game as a starter in a great venue against a really good team, but he's settled in. You know, he's had a tremendous offseason. You know, I think the guy's worked as hard as anybody I've ever been around. You know, he plays with confidence. He's a student of the game. Very self-disciplined kid, you know, and I think watching him, you know, he takes the approach of playing the game every day. You know, so we're going to go out here and practice today, and he's going to be out there competing like it's game day. And, you know, he's a great example to his teammates. I thought he had his best performance of the year this past Saturday and made great decisions. And we ask a lot of that guy in our system. You know, he kind of has the keys to the car. There aren't many plays where he's not deciding where the ball goes. So I think it's important that he continues to make good decisions and we end up in advantage plays. That's kind of how we're put together. So I'm very proud of Levi and excited to watch him continue to grow and make improvement. I do think his best football is in front of him, and the best is yet to come.
Coach, I have to ask you about T.J. Wisham. He had a huge game for you against Texas Southern. Just how happy was it for you to see that young man be able to excel on the field for your program?
Well, T.J. came to us as a walk-on last year. You know, paid his way to school, kind of earned his stripes. He was on the scout team last year. He was a scout team running back, did a tremendous job. Earned a scholarship in the offseason. We put him on during training camp. And now he's a four-core special teams player and a very capable running back. Obviously, it's a pretty loaded running back room, so he doesn't necessarily get a chance to carry the ball week in and week out. But I think we all saw that he's very capable. He is a sophomore. He's got three seasons left. So there'll be a day where he'll be running the ball for the Cajuns, and we look forward to that. But in the meantime, he's a great special teams player and a tremendous teammate. And really does a great job. He's a great example in the community. He's a great example in the classroom. He's everything that we would want one of our football players to be. So happy for him to have some success as a running back and really looking forward to him and the impact that he'll make on our team in the future as well.
Wrapping things up here with UL head football coach Billy Napier. His team takes on Ohio this Saturday. Coach, you've talked about it a lot throughout camp and throughout the season about the progression of the Raging Cajun defense under second-year defensive coordinator Ron Roberts, and they keep getting better every week. Is the defense where you need it to be? And if not, where do you think they still need to maybe improve a little bit?
Well, it's about building depth. You know, I think we've got lots of young players. In particular, we've got a group of twos and threes at about every position on defense where, you know, we need to continue to refine those young players' game. You know, they got to eliminate the fundamental flaws that they have. We got to communicate better with that second group. And certainly, I think we've seen improvement. We're covering better. We're tackling better. I think we've got better gap integrity. But the, you know, the challenges are ahead. Each and every week's a little bit different. You got to adjust, you know, depending on who you're playing, what personnel they have, what are the matchups, and certainly this week will be no different. But there's no question. I think this is, I've said in the past, last year was year zero on defense. This is year one. I think just because of what we inherited there from a personnel standpoint and also fundamental foundation and kind of a conceptually. So I'm very proud of our defensive coaches and support staff. You know, not only Coach Roberts, but the assistants, the GAs on that side of the ball, the QCs on that side of the ball. They've had a tremendous offseason. And certainly excited to watch them continue to improve as the season goes.
Coach, appreciate your time. Best of luck to you and your young men this Saturday, and we'll talk to you soon.
Hey, before I go here, I'd like to just really say how much we appreciate our fans. I thought the atmosphere on Saturday night was outstanding. You know, that place continues to fill up a little bit more each and every week. And I'm excited about what we can do here, and I look forward to coming back home here in a couple weeks. But just want to say thank you to the fans, to our students, and certainly everybody in the community that came out.
Not a problem, Coach. Best of luck to you.
Thank you, guys.
Make sure to tune in next Wednesday for A Cup of Cajun Talk with Billy Napier, presented by Meters Kitchen Supply and Gulf Coast Bank. RP3.
Gulf Coast Bank takes great pride in being not only an active member of the Acadiana community, but also one of its strongest supporters. Gulf Coast Bank is a locally owned and operated full-service banking institution with 13 locations within Lafayette and Vermilion parishes, including branches inside three area Walmarts with extended hours for your convenience. Visit your nearest Gulf Coast Bank today. We're your Acadiana Bank. How can we help you? Gulf Coast Bank, FDIC insured, equal housing lender.
Metters Kitchen Equipment on Evangeline Thruway in Johnston is the place to shop for all your kitchen equipment and supplies. For nearly 50 years, Metters has been equipping restaurants, convenience stores, churches, and nursing homes, and quickly supplying the best for your dollar. The Metters family is local, friendly, and guarantees your satisfaction. Metters Equipment is on the corner of Evangeline Thruway in Johnston, providing parts and outstanding service on all your kitchen equipment. For kitchens that last, it's Metters Kitchen Equipment on the corner of Johnston and Evangeline Thruway.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We broadcast every morning from 6 to 9 from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network. That's 32.1. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. Guys, do you want to go toe-to-toe with the fine folks here at 103.7 The Game and Delta Media when it comes to picking correct games for the NFL? Well, if you do, you can test that football knowledge with Acadiana Sports Station. Just make sure to get your picks in every week. Week 3 is taking picks right now at 1037thegame.com and try and beat the best with the Twin Peaks Pro Pick'em Challenge. Twin Peaks Pro Pick'em Challenge. It's free to join. It's free to sign up. Make sure to get your picks in. Hey, if you don't get in by Thursday, not a problem. You can still play. You just missed the Thursday game, and you still make all your picks for the Sunday and Monday night contest. So sign up now for the Twin Peaks Pro Pick'em Challenge at 1037thegame.com. Louis Prejean, producer extraordinaire, the man behind the glass, the man behind the man. Sir, we asked the people a poll question. People were a little irate on the social media platforms yesterday about Nick Saban being inducted into the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. We decided to ask it as our poll question of the day. Give us the options and what the voting results are so far today, brother.
Okay, Ray. You, on a station that talks LSU, you throw Nick Saban's name out here, you're going to get some reaction. We knew that. Put the poll up. Does former LSU head football coach and current Alabama coach Nick Saban deserve to be in the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame? 71.4% of the vote. Yes, he built LSU into a power. 21.4% of the vote. Yes, but only after he retires, and there's one vote, Ray.
One vote.
One vote for never. Can't forgive him. One vote. Thank you, Ray.
Can't forgive him for winning you your first national championship since 1958 and stocking the cupboard full and setting up your next national championship, which was won by the coach preceding him. Oh, and not forgiving him for leaving and going to the Miami Dolphins. Oh, by the way, if he doesn't take the Dolphins job, remember this, LSU fan, about the Nicktator. If he doesn't leave LSU and goes to the Dolphins and tries to get Drew Brees to come there, But the Dolphins medical staff overruled him. Yes, Nick Saban would never probably return to college ranks and to hated Alabama. But the Saints would have never gotten Drew Brees. Remember that. Remember that. Don't forget that part. Because I know most of you diehard LSU fans are also members of, proud members of the Hoodat Nation. We had a tremendous show today. I want to thank Steve Helwick, who covers the Ohio Bobcats, giving us a taste of behind enemy lines, so to speak, with the Raging Cajuns opponent coming up on Saturday. I want to thank the voice of the LSU Tigers, Chris Blair, for breaking down the Bayou Bengals. I want to thank Connor O'Gara. Man, he's one of the best in the business. Joins us here on a semi-weekly basis. He broke down all things in college football. And then a big shout-out and appreciation to Billy Napier, UL head football coach, for joining us, talking about his team and the challenges they face this Saturday when they take on Ohio. Also want to thank our callers from earlier today for calling in, fired up about them Saints. Much appreciate the phone calls. And we got a jam-packed edition for you tomorrow as well, guys. John Marques from the Town Talk, towntalk.com, joins us. Adam Sparks, he covers Vanderbilt for the Tennessean. He's going to join us, giving us the other perspective from the LSU-Vandy game on Saturday. James Yasko talking all things Astro. Has Verlander wrapped up to Cy Young? Has Alvarez wrapped up Rookie of the Year? And can Alex Bregman, with Mike Trout being injured, possibly win the MVP? Can they have the clean sweep through the awards? Also, Les East from Crescent City Sports and Tyler Nunez from Tiger Ag. You got to make sure to tune in from 6 to 9 for RP3 and Company. For myself, Raymond Parts III, for producer extraordinaire Louis Prejean, it was a tremendous show. Y'all have a great day out there today. Enjoy yourself. Be kind to one another. And we'll talk to you tomorrow morning from 6 to 9 right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game.